Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. This is our exclusive preview of the match. Or should I say Capital One's
Capital
the
One presents the match.
Presents the match? Is that what it is?
I don't know. Capital One's the match?
It's a mouthful.
Missed opportunity for the match presented by Capital One.
I don't know how the estates of Harvey Ward, Ken Venturi, Byron Nelson, and Ben Hogan feel about using the name The Match. It seems kind of weird.
Yeah, they could have got a little more creative. There's some issues with The Match, and we're going to get into some of that.
It might be a match.
It might be a match.
Capital One's a match.
We have, hopefully, what is you'll hear from a few guests here later in the podcast. DJ and I are getting ready to fly out. We're recording this on Monday of Match Week. We're getting ready.
The Match Week.
Ready to fly out west and interview the two participants in the match. We had a lot of debate on figuring out how we wanted to handle it, how we wanted to work it out. DJ, why don't you walk us through kind of what the thought process was there?
Well, Solly had gotten a phone call when we were at Sea Island. There's a lot of handlers, I guess. It's kind of a reductive term, but you know, a lot of people making this thing happen.
There's a lot of people involved.
a lot of cooks in the kitchen. One of them, who was kind of had a lot of access to both players, had said, "Hey, you know, I think it might be kind of cool if you guys wanted to have Tiger and Phil on your podcast."
Sounds great.
For some reason, you know, we were slightly hesitant. Solly, I think, was all in. Tron and I were kind of on the fence. Randy, I don't know where you were. Randy's probably out.
Very cynical.
Cynical Randy wanted to, you know, he was looking to go interview like the people at, like the Nebraska Four Ball this week or something. But no, the only reason we were hesitant was there are a couple strings. You know, it's going to be kind of a 10-15 minute thing. It's about the match. No surprise there. And so, you know, we're looking at like what this podcast is, and a lot of times it's long form, it's getting into guys' backgrounds, it's taking a much longer view approach at those kinds of interviews, and this is not going to be that. And so that was my only hesitation, was like, look, do we want to, you know, I don't want to bait and switch anybody into thinking this is a full-on interview with these guys, because it's not going to be that. It's going to be 10 or 15 minutes.
We hope. We haven't recorded
it. We haven't recorded it yet. But I think eventually, you know, someone kind of snapped their fingers and was like, hey, like, it's fucking Tiger and Phil. it's literally Tiger and Phil on the podcast. We're recording this right now in a house that we've nicknamed the Kill House, based on like a throwaway comment from Tiger. Tiger runs like every part of our golf fandom. He's the cat. It's the cat. Yeah. And so ultimately, I think we came to the decision of like, I mean, who knows what it's going to be, but it's Tiger and Phil. Like, let's just go do it and see.
I just hope we don't compromise on our lofty journalistic integrity. And, you know, I don't want them dictating exactly what questions. I want you guys to go out there and ask. Even though it's in a defined space, I want you guys dictating what questions you want to ask.
Okay. Oh, we've got it. We got our questions ready.
So that was, you know, I feel like, hey, it's not a bad situation because we don't necessarily owe them anything. You know, they're looking for some eyeballs, for some pay-per-view clicks.
Sure.
And Solly, I think you said it earlier, we've reached the nadir of
this thing bottomed out. Like, the match had such horrible momentum right off the bat, and it just kind of all compounded on top of each other. Decision not to have fans and not to blah, blah, blah. It just all the PR was kind of a disaster for this thing. It got off to a terrible start. And I feel like it's come back around, at least at minimum, to the point where we have to give this thing a shot.
That's
my take on it.
There's like nothing going on Friday.
Yeah. I know everyone's pumped for West Virginia, Oklahoma Friday night, but like, just to get us there. I know Randy's got some takes as to how they could have done it differently. I think if they all wanted to do it over again, there's a million things they would do differently. But like, you know what I'd also like probably would do differently? Like our first 50 podcasts. Like everything we've ever done, like the first iteration is, at, there's always things to improve upon. So I think for as much as we've wanted different things to happen in golf, how cool would it? So let's say something random happened, like they added a stroke play event this week. If we were sitting around watching it, we would be like, you know what would be cool? If like Tiger and Phil had a match, like I would watch that. Yeah, they screwed up a lot of the details, but like this is going to be worth at least seeing. It might stink. It very well might, but like it's
going
to be worth
seeing. Well, going a step farther, I think it's only it's $20.
Yeah.
Which is like three beers on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving out at the bar, basically. And it's the kind of thing where we bitch a lot about the amount of commercials on telecasts and how staid and conservative and outdated golf broadcasts are. Let's see what they do differently. That's the part that I'm keeping an open mind for. I think some of the quote-unquote wagers and all of that I think is a little bit of window dressing. But the actual views and vantage points and camera angles and I'm curious to see what they do there, because I think these matches are probably a trend that we'll see continue, because these, you know, some of the better players in the world want to get a little bit more of their piece of the pie, I think.
That's why I'm rooting for it, I think, is like there is a lot to be learned from these, and Rory coming out and like dismissing it very strongly, I was surprising, because I'm thinking there's a person that could probably benefit a lot from some of these things financially. I mean, yeah. who wouldn't want to watch Rory and Randy's boy Ricky in a match or something like that? So
gross.
Brought to you by Quicken Loans.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. That's what kind of swayed me at the last minute. Not the last minute, but you know, I was as cynical as anyone about it, and I don't want to. My biggest fear with this was that, you know, it would look like we had a little bit of access waved under our noses, and now suddenly we have this glowing review of it. And I don't think that's the case, but I think it's just pure, it's curiosity of, okay, I legitimately, like, there's really no holds barred on this. They should be able to do anything they want. So I'm curious to see what that is. And the other thing is, like you said, John, I mean, we talk so much about there's 900 million stroke play events every year, and anything that's different, like, we really should be rooting for, and certainly not writing off before it even starts. So there's a couple of elements that are concerning, but I mean, we'll talk about those afterwards. We'll see how they feel.
Here's what I think is actually the most important thing about it from a casual, like a viewer perspective, is I feel like when Fox got into the game at the US Open in 2015, that broadcast was a disaster that first year. They'll flat out tell you that. However, it changed the game a little bit in terms of pro tracer use and like being willing to do different stuff. And I feel like this has that opportunity. There is somebody outside of the realm of golf that is going to go for something crazy. And hopefully that raises the bar on broadcast in other places. Randy, you look like you still have some concerns over there.
I have concerns. I think we all share in some concerns. You know, I think the biggest disappointment...
You take no pleasure in having these concerns.
No, yeah. and I really don't want to like be just that guy who takes the opposite side. But I think the biggest concern or the biggest thing they screwed up, in my opinion, is not playing for their own money. I think once they decided to make it like this sponsor purse that they play for, I think it loses a little bit of interest. It loses a little bit of intrigue, I guess.
Are they really going to pony up $4 or $5 million?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I think if that's the case, like, it just doesn't happen.
So yeah, the option is, hey, should we pay for it or have somebody else pay for it?
Well, I guess, but they didn't need to play for $9 million, I guess, is my point.
I agree, like, with that.
Had they each ponied up $500K and then played for $1 million, that's a lot more interesting to me than playing for somebody else's money.
I get no thrill out of the amount of money that they're playing for. Well, I don't care about that at all.
And the tour said you guys can't play for...
Well, I don't know if that's...
$10 million, because...
That's alleged, but I don't know.
Very strong.
The initial report was that it's $10 million. Now they're playing for $9 million, and I can only think of one other $10 million purse in golf that might have been offended by that number. So we're connecting strings, True Detective style, but I you know.
Well, the other thing, too, is they're probably getting some money on the back end.
They are.
Too.
No, they are. So there's like a organization basically set up for revenue that is, according to the Golf World article by Dave Shedlowski, like, there is money to be made off of the actual pay-per-view and match right. stuff from these guys as well. So, I mean, you got to think about how many people need paid off this, how many people are working yeah. on this thing and how much has gone into it. I mean, all the airtime that's gone on TNT and, you know, Ernie and them, you know, interviewing Tiger while he's in the Bahamas. Like, this isn't just like, all right, $9 million in goes to these two guys.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
it's MGM's involved. Like, it's a... And I think that's part of what your beef is, Randy. It's like there's just so much going on. In
well, when you get that many cooks in the kitchen,
correct.
It just loses. It just becomes this out of control, nebulous, you know, big thing that, yeah, I think strays from, well, what's interesting at the heart of it is Tiger versus Phil. And when you start attaching all this other crap, like all it can do is just detract, I think, from my interest in like purely what should be Tiger versus Phil.
Yeah. I wonder too what the involvement of the gaming commission would prevent Tiger and Phil like from putting up their own money. I don't know. I know there's a lot of thought that has gone into down to like where they put the pins for some of these challenges that are going to happen, where like the gaming commission has to make sure that it's set up to be fair. I have no idea like what, if they put up their own money, what kind of element that adds to it.
It's the nanny state.
It's like you don't allow, no one else is allowed to bet on themselves in sporting events or bet against themselves. So I think it's complicated. The whole thing is very complicated.
Well, I think what Randy's saying is they should do it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
No. And I for sure concede that maybe it's not possible for them to like put up their own money. I don't know what rules and restrictions are. But what I am saying is I think it would be much more interesting if like what are our favorite stories are like the Tiger Phil gambling stories on like Monday,
right?
Just play that match. Like, yo, you all just play each other and make the stakes what you want between the two of you and play for each other's money. Like, I'm watching that. When it's $9 million of Capital One, and it just loses some of that
Randy's
natural
just pissed
intrigue.
That there's not a Capital One cafe here in Jacksonville.
But I think too, what also bothers me is, and Tron, you touched on this, like the side bets and the money goes to charity. Like this is going to sound terrible. Like God bless the charities for getting money. But like, it just like, what are we doing? Like we're going to Vegas and we're having this like winner take all lots of money. And then it's like the side bets are for charity. It just feels so mismatched.
Well, it's kind of, it's Tron's favorite thing is, you know, the birdies for charity sort of thing. It's like, just give the money to charity.
Right.
Just give it to him. Like, why are we doing this?
And if we're going out there to have this like gluttonous, like winner take all money match, then just take the money. Like, don't, right. yeah, don't give it
That's
to charity.
Shadow Creek of all places.
It just, feels like they want to try to do everything, and by trying to be too much to too many people, it just cheapens the whole thing.
My biggest complaint thus far has been trying to make it one of golf's most illustrious rivalries. In actuality, how many times have Tiger and Phil, other than the time that Phil beat Tiger's ass at Pebble a few years back, that was sick. But like they both just have kind of done their own thing, and it's been more of a non-rivalry than it has been a passionate, no holds barred, you know, instinctive rivalry. Yeah. It's just that to me has felt the most forced of the whole.
I was surprised they didn't actually play up more of their used to dislike each other. They kind of actually downplayed it, like the media has overhyped that we didn't like each other. That was surprising to me. I thought that they had a good chance to fake it if you need to, but like give us the, oh yeah, I couldn't stand that guy. He was out of shape and blah, blah, blah. And you know, Tiger had inferior equipment. That would have been some good trash talk.
I feel like I don't even know Tiger anymore. He's palling around with Bryson, getting along with everybody. He's in a stable relationship.
He's
like,
new cat.
He's accepting podcast requests.
Yeah.
He's new cat.
Yeah. It's everything just kind of feels whitewashed and vanilla a little bit.
Are you going to watch?
I mean, yeah, because I think we're going to be together, right?
Literally,
we're going to split.
Randy,
the cost.
We're going to lock you in the house, yeah. in the kill house, and make you.
So
up.
Yeah, I'll watch.
You're
it.
Pitching your $5, and we'll split it four ways.
Well, so we talked about this a bit too, just like offline, kind of debating. You know, do we want to stay out there? So we're recording this Monday. We're allegedly talking to Tiger and Phil on Tuesday, which the second half of this podcast is going to be very interesting if that falls through, because it'll be me and Solly.
We might be re-recording
at like the Golden Nugget, drowning our sorrows. But yeah, we debated like, do we want to stay you know, through Thanksgiving and stay for the match and be on site. And I think, I don't know how you guys feel, but to me, the most exciting part of this is these guys being mic'd up nonstop for 18 holes with no commercials. I mean, that's the dream.
It's exciting, but also has me nervous that it's going to be way. I mean, Phil is going to have 2 pages worth of one-liners prepared. Like Hellacious Seed from the 24/7 was, he thought it was way better than it was. Like,
I was in on Hellacious Seed.
He's going to have a lot of those. And I'm a little nervous about it being a bit too forced. Go ahead, Randy.
No, I was just going to ask, are the mics going to be up the whole time? Or is it, are we going to be in the hands of a producer?
I got to imagine. I don't know. Well, hey, listen, I don't know the answer to that, but I can find someone who does.
We'll find out for you. We're going to get some answers on that.
Yeah, I'm glad we had the opportunity to go out and watch it out there on site. I don't think there's any upside to being on site or inside ropes. I don't even know if they're going to have ropes with, I guess they've got 100 or 200 VIPs there, but it's a made for TV product.
Yeah.
Watch it on TV.
So also supposedly, part of the reason why one of the things people had beef with was they weren't allowing fans, but part of the reason was that it was because they can't legally fly drones above big crowds of people. And there are going to be drones like hovering over. We're hoping this happens as well. In the back half of this, we're going to talk to a producer from TNT to talk about how they're going to cover this event and why it's interesting.
Okay, I got 2 questions before we wrap things up. I think the most interesting thing about the match is the ramifications going forward in the golf world.
Agree.
And if we want to quickly talk about that.
It's pilot season right now.
It's exactly pilot season. And then 2, does this, like, would you pay $20 to watch anybody else play right now?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
Patrick Reed versus anyone like Jordan Spieth, that would pay probably 54 right now. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. And something that I'm sure producers and everyone are trying to figure out.
But like I would pay, I don't know, $20 a month for a channel for golf that didn't have commercials. Are you kidding? Like that's part of the reason I don't tune in to watch
with
golf.
Hot mics for sure.
Yeah. Like that's alone for paying to not have commercials. I wouldn't pay $20 every time I turn the TV on, but I think there's something to this. The difference between no commercials and commercials, it's a lot of air to fill. A little nervous about that, but it sounds like they have a plan for it. That is like worth the price of admission. I think right there.
I think there's kind of like a dirty secret about that though, because I remember it's happened a couple times. If you watch as much like PGA Tour Live and just web tour coverage and whatever as all of us kind of do, sometimes you'll get that weird thing where like the mic feeds aren't working and you're just watching natural sound golf. I remember the web tour.
It was the best.
Maybe it might have even been the nationwide tour at that time. I forget who the producer is. I think Brant Packer, maybe. I don't want to give credit to the wrong person, but I think that's who it is. And they did this thing where it was a Saturday afternoon or maybe even like Friday or something. And they said, okay, this is totally experimental, but we're going to try to have a telecast, 2-hour telecast with basically no commentators. So, you know, we'll give you an intro at the top of the hour. We'll give you periodic updates, but the rest is just going to be nat sound. And it was awesome. So that's kind of the other aspect of this is if they have a little bit of restraint, like I'll watch Tiger and Phil just walk around and stalk their shot and read their putt. And I don't need anybody talking.
Agreed.
Like just, I don't need anybody talking. I think the worst thing they could do is try to fill all that air.
Right.
Whereas it's like, we're watching golf.
Terrifies me.
Yeah. We're not watching, you know, it's not like stand-up comedy hour here that we're watching. It's a golf tournament, right? Like just leave the air natural. And that feels like watching golf.
And that's my hope too. Like if we're going to pay $20, I want it to be like a voyeuristic experience
instead of
Phil coming like prepared with one-liners and them like
fake juice,
feeling like they got to ham up for the cameras. Like, no, just be yourselves, please. And just we'll eavesdrop on the whole thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. I feel much better than I did kind of when that first trailer rolled out.
That was brutal.
I thought it was going to be a lot more fake juice than I think it will be, but 24/7 has me excited.
It wasn't spectacular. It was solid.
I mean, HBO can make anything look interesting.
That's very true. I think we can all agree, right, that no one
except the young Pope. That was bad.
No one has cared more about not caring about something as the people that hate this match.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think that's well said. There's no reason to hate it before we've seen anything.
Like, oh, there's no way I'll ever spend money on this.
Yeah,
okay. Replying to every tweet, it's like, just cool. Ignore it.
Honestly, I'm more keen to watch this match than I am like Tiger's event in the Bahamas.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree.
Totally. They get world ranking points for that one, which is a disgrace, but that's neither here nor there.
It's a topic for another podcast.
They should give world ranking points away for this. That would just to trigger you. So, all right, without further ado.
Well, listen, let's go to the airport. I don't know how it's going to go, but we'll try our best.
Hopefully up next after this sentence is Tiger Woods on the No Laying Up podcast. Last call here before we bring in the big guy. Callaway has done it again with another unbelievable original short film series. You heard us talk on this podcast about their series Golf Lives, which was the home course series. It documents three completely different and diverse golf courses in DC, Nebraska, and Portland, and what they mean to the people that play them. If you haven't, you must check those out at callawaygolf.com/golflives. And now they just launched their newest original series called The Jump, which highlights four of their youngest stars, including Maverick McNealy, who you just heard on this podcast last week, Sam Burns, who managed to outduel Tiger on Sunday at last year's Honda Classic, Norman Young, the Oregon standout who swings a driver at 130 plus miles an hour, and Dylan Meyer, a.k.a. DJ Defunk, who finished T20 at last year's U.S. Open at Shinnecock. So Callaway was able to showcase the unique personalities of each of these guys as they document their transition from golf's minor leagues to the PGA Tour. And each film is less than 3 minutes long, so it's easy to binge the entire series of The Jump. So check them out at callawaygolf.com/thejump or download Callaway TV on Roku and Apple TV and watch right on your TV at home. And as an added bonus, you can also watch Tourist Sauce Season 2, our original series, on Callaway TV. So make sure you download that today.
All right, so we have arrived in Las Vegas. We're in the shadow of the MGM Grand right now. The interview's done.
Yeah.
We had a 12-6 curveball thrown at us at the last minute.
Stayed in the box, hit a little gapper.
Yeah, we were kind of like trying to wait on it, and then just kind of a front foot, like slap.
Seeing eye.
Slap double. Yeah. I hope it was a double. I mean, I think maybe a right field error.
3 minutes before we were supposed to record, we got asked to combine the two of them together. We weren't set up for that, so we had to split up. I interviewed Tiger. DJ interviewed Phil in the bathroom on a phone microphone, which just threw us all for a loop. So we got our time cut down.
Which, let me say, is understandable. Like, I was in awe of how many interviews these guys did throughout the day. Every time we saw them, they were doing another TV crew, another this, another that. No other podcast, I don't think. I think we were the only podcast, which I don't know if that worked for us or against us. Listen,
we were thrilled to have them on.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Of course, we'd like to have more time, but in a different scenario. But that was awesome. Thank you to both of them for doing it, for everyone that made it happen. Without further ado, we're going to play Tiger first, and then we're going to cut to Phil and DJ in the bathroom, which went about as good as it could.
Listen, what an honor. I think, honestly, like, that might become kind of my block. Is if there's anyone listening to this that wants to do an interview in the bathroom, I'm game. If you're game, just, you know, I'm very easy to get a hold of. Just let me know.
All right, let's roll it.
On the tee from USA, Tiger Woods.
All right, Tiger, you've done exhibitions in the past, but never anything like this. Why did you want to do this?
Well, I wanted to be a part of the game in a different way. You know, I've done matches under the lights before in the past, and this is something that's different. This is something that is unique and is interesting. Yeah, there's a huge economic importance to this event, but I understand that this is also doing something that's never been done before, and you know, and trying to make something like this successful is a unique challenge, and I found intriguing and I'm very interested in it.
We've heard stories of Phil's gamesmanship. Is he actually good at it, or is he just good at telling everybody how good he is at gamesmanship?
He's both. Okay. He's definitely both.
You what's know, a Phil, what's a good example of a
well,
jab?
Well, Phil is one that is very more outwardly towards his jab with his jabs, and he tries to subtly, not I wouldn't say subtly, also subtly, try and get in your head with either wagers or it's just one-liners and just things. And on top of that, once he gets up, he's one of the worst front runners there is.
How so?
Because he'll just nonstop chap.
Yeah.
You know, he just he'll chirp nonstop, and then when he's down, it's a little different deal.
You the same though when you're up on him? Are you jabbing at him like that?
Nah, or is it different style? I'm more of, more subtle than that. Yeah. And I've always been that way. More so on the because of the nature of our tour. That's one of the unique things about this pay-per-view event is that we're having mics on there live nonstop. Well, I was describing to one of the interviews earlier is that, it's just going to be very different from what you normally face. And I said, in essence, not really. Because when I get to the golf course, I have a camera on me. When I get to the putting green or range, I have a camera on me. I've had people try to sneak in camera phones and try and catch live or audio remarks in, shag bags that we give with golf balls. I've had it all. Mm-hmm. And so this is not too different from what I have to face, week in and week out. Yes, it's a live mic then. Entire time, but we have boom mics that are trying to get us the entire time. We have camera phones that people are on tee boxes that are open and trying to record what we're saying, or even post different things from if I'm having a conversation with my caddy or with another player. You'll have gallery members that are have their camera phones out trying to record all this. Sure. So this is not too uncommon, too new to me.
You mentioned having cameras on you from the time you arrive. I felt like this year you kept upping your game in your arrival attire. You started going cutoff sleeves. You had backwards hats, sunglasses. Was that a conscious thing?
No, it wasn't. No, I'll be honest with you.
You knew the internet was going to go wild for that.
I had done this so many times throughout the years. But the only difference is that this year there's been a lot more interest in, I think, my round that particular day. And, sometimes they would catch me with, cut off sleeves because I just came from the workout trailer, which is in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And so I'd walk from the parking lot and didn't want to get my clothes, all sweaty because I'm going to take a shower in a clubhouse. And so, they get me in, those situations. But that's not too uncommon for a lot of the tour players, mm-hmm. a lot of tour pros. And I just, again, happen to have cameras on me all the time once I arrived at the golf course. So something that is unique and what I would say, not so unique, but it's uncommon for me. It's normality that for me showing up at a golf course and doing these different things has now been captured.
You're in Phil's relationship. It seems like it has evolved over the years, and you guys have been kind of quick to downplay some of the previous parts of your relationship. But I want to know, take me back to like the early to mid 2000s. What's that relationship like? Do you guys text each other? Do you talk on the range? And how is that different than it is today?
No, we definitely didn't text one another back in those days. Uh-huh. We were competing against one another. I was one and he was two in the world for so many weeks. And we were trying to outdo one another. And it's very similar to what Jack and Arnold went through early part of their career. They didn't really acknowledge one another, like they did later in their career. And certainly post playing at an elite level, they became a lot closer. And that's what has transitioned with us is that we've understood that we are certainly more alike than we would like to admit. And we both care and passionate about a lot of the same things. And, that's one of the reasons why Phil's donating, his charitable efforts to the military. I was born and raised around the military. My father served. And, so these are things that, I wasn't really privy to early on in my relationship with him, but I've become very close with him in a lot of these aspects.
If you could swap out one part of your game for one part of Phil's game,
what would it be? Definitely a short game.
Yeah, that was easy.
It's sick. It's what he can do around the greens. It's just amazing. I got a chance early in my career. I was working with Butch, and Seve was working with Butch at the same time that we'd coincide a lot of my training camps around Seve. And so I got a chance to get to know Seve at a pretty good level around, short game wise, and watch him hit a lot of shots and have him explain a lot of the things, how he did it. What he did was phenomenal, but I think what Phil does is even better because really? Seve had a 56 degree sandwich and he had to make it work. The pins weren't as tight then, but the greens were a little bit slower. But with the pins are being so tight and Phil going to like a 60 or 64 degrees of loft, he's able to hit shots that no one could hit. But then again, he's trying to pull off shots that no one's ever tried to pull off, and he does. That's what made Seve so amazing is that he hit shots that we only maybe even thought about entertaining for, you know, a millisecond, but he'd pull it off. Well, Phil's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. What seems like high risk to a lot of us is not high risk to him because he's that good.
If you had to pick a partner for a $9 million match, who's the first phone call? What's the first phone call you're making?
Well, that's easy. It's Phil.
Yeah?
Yeah, no doubt. The way,
because of his gambling?
Because of, yeah, of what he does all the time, and the amount of side wagers that he always plays with, and he's very good at playing in these type of games. He does it every Tuesday. You know, you look at him at major championships or it's weekend, sorry, normal events. His Tuesday games are legendary. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, pick a partner, come get us, and they're for, you know, pretty large amounts, and it's cash on site, so it's pretty good.
All right, we've got a list of questions in a folder we marked. If we ever get to interview Tiger, we'll do mm-hmm. a few rapid fires. You did an interview with Bill McAtee in 2015 at the Masters that no one followed up on. Did you really pop a bone in your wrist out of place at the 2015 Masters and put it back in?
Mm-hmm,
I did. What was the follow-up like for that? Was there, I mean, was it all swollen after that?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was swollen, and I didn't play for another couple weeks. It was ice and stem.
Wow.
For a couple weeks before I tried to even get to the point where I tried to strengthen it again, but I had to get the swelling out.
Mm-hmm. What's the most nervous you've ever been over one golf shot?
Oh, it's very simple. It was the 92... Nissan LA Open. It was my first tee shot ever in a PGA Tour event. I was an amateur, 16. And I'll never forget, it was, this is no big deal, right? It's just a 3-wood down the fairway, mm-hmm. just like any other 3-wood. But I practice swings were fine. I got the ball, teed up fine, built a stance, took it back. And all of a sudden, it felt like the club weighed 15 pounds. I didn't know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never felt like, evidently, I didn't have the nervousness until I got into a position where I'm starting to make a golf swing to hit this golf ball. So once I got past the takeaway, it's usually when I start thinking about trying to make a golf swing. And then all of a sudden, boom, this 15-pound object shows up in my hand. And I'll never forget just hitting right down the middle of the fairway, but I don't remember what impact felt like.
Right. You blacked out on
I was like, wow, I can't believe I should pull that off. And I had never felt a feeling like that ever since.
Has anything in the more competitive part of your career, has anything
no,
ever
No, nothing
to
has
that?
Ever felt like that. I've had some pressure, I think some pressure putts that I've made, mm-hmm. but nothing's ever felt like that.
If you could have one mulligan for any one shot in your career, what would it be?
Oh gosh, there's wouldn't be just one. there's so many. I think if I look back on the round I played at the Quad Cities in '96 when I lost to the gripper, that was a moment where I'd forgotten all of my training and I'd forgotten how I won events, and I got, you know, I took myself out of a rhythm and how I played events, and just because it was a tour event. And I learned from that lesson, and I won a few weeks later at Vegas for my first event on tour. But that was a big learning moment for me.
What's your biggest fashion regret in your career?
No, because at the time I made it look good. It was the MC Hammer pants. It was a big baggy shirt, but we all wore them.
I know.
You know, we at the time, if you remember, Ashworth had the shirts, the double thick cotton that went past our elbows, but we all wore them because, you know, Freddie wore them.
Yeah.
You know, he made it look cool. That's why we picked up our sleeves and tried to make it fit and tried to hold it up on our neck. But that was a time in which we all wore baggy stuff, and now everything's going to more tighter, streamlined fit.
Very last one. What is a skill of yours that you think is somehow unappreciated or underrated that maybe people don't give you enough credit for? Asking you to brag on yourself, but I was always curious to hear that one.
I'm probably underestimated. My level of enjoyment for comics.
Yeah?
Comics, yeah. I grew up trying to save, you know, my savings from, you know, gambling at the golf course or my paper routes or, you know, all those different things to buy comics. Yeah. There was, back when you had hard, you know, hardback comics. And so that was a time in which, yeah, I... I've always fell in love with, you know, Marvel and DC universes, and everyone around me knows that, how much I love it. My mom loves it. She actually keeps me more up to date than I am. And so that's been fun over the years. And
cool. Appreciate the time.
You got it. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thanks.
Our brother.
On the team from USA, Phil Mickelson.
Phil, like I said, I've hoped to speak with you for a long time. This isn't, you know, how I pictured my first time in the men's bathroom at Shadow Creek. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we always start with kind of the most pressing question, which for you, I got to believe, is the leather jacket on Faraday. Was that, you know, was that a conscious choice? Was that a performance art piece of some sort? What was the thought process
was
there?
Was that the most pressing question?
That was, yeah.
So I have multiple leather jackets that I wear out mostly with jeans and a t-shirt. That's kind of my outfit that I feel most comfortable in. So I have probably 5 to 8 that I rotate and wear.
I love it. So you guys are mic'd up this week. Does that mean, are you going through and kind of writing one-liners? You looked extremely comfortable in the press conference. What's that? Does it all come natural to you? You seem very well positioned for this.
On Tuesday, we're going to be more affable than we are on Friday. When we, you know, the intensity and the pressure when you start playing for those kind of numbers, especially in a match play head-to-head format, it gets to be much more intense. But the smack talk has been a gift that Tiger's always had that I feel like I've been okay at. And when we're mic'd, I think you're going to kind of see some of the banter that goes on between us. You'll certainly get the in-depth analysis that a player and a caddy experiences. So I think that this event is going to showcase a side to the competition that most viewers don't get to see. But one of it is going to be that banter smack talk.
You talk about Tiger being very skilled in that regard. I don't know if, you know, people don't always get to see that from him. What's he like behind the scenes? Paint a picture
for us. The reason they don't get to see that is he's got microphones in his face all the time. So when he does say something, he kind of says it under his breath where you can't see his lips move so that you can't identify that it's him. But he always makes these little subtle passive-aggressive jabs. And they're funny. I mean, he's great at it. I think that side of him is going to come out in this event, and I think that's a good thing because it's a bit of a risk anytime you put stuff out there that is more intimate like that, that you don't always let people in. But I think that side of him is really funny and a real plus if people have a chance to see it.
So to the casual fan, you know, one of the things that kind of jumps out about the match is obviously the money. You guys are the two highest earners in professional golf history. Can you put in perspective, you know, what does $9 million mean to you guys? Is that a fair question? Does that make sense?
I get what you're saying, but keep in mind that it's an entire purse of the PGA Tour. It's four or five times what we ever play for first place check. So it would be the largest first place check ever. And no matter how much money you make, it's enough to make you nervous and uncomfortable. So we definitely want to win. But what it's also doing, though, is showcasing the future of what watching sports is going to be like, because with only two guys, we're able to do things you can't do in other telecasts. By limiting the number of people that are watching, we're able to have a technical side of production that you can't normally have. We're going to have a guy with a camera walking around us getting views and angles that you never get to see. Drones that are in up close and personal, seeing the shots, the swings, and so forth, as well as having on screen the actual odds of the odds to win the hole, to win the match, to hit certain shots, closest to the pin, the side challenges that we're going to have, as well as being mic'd. It's more than just the $9 million. It's kind of a glimpse into the future of where sports watching is going.
So do you, when you, you know, off weeks and everything, do you watch a lot of golf on TV? And you know, have you taken any positives, frustrations, anything, and put it into this?
I usually watch during the season because it helps motivate me to practice. So I'll watch a little bit while I'm practicing on the weekends. I don't watch too much in November or December because there aren't really tournaments going on. But this is, it had a match like this been out there when I was growing up or watching as a kid, I would have definitely been a part of it and excited to see, just like I was with the Skins game when that was out. I still crave to watch golf, but there aren't events that excite me at this time.
So there's so much stroke play golf throughout the year. There's so much PGA Tour golf, European Tour. I mean, there's so much golf that looks very similar. This obviously looks incredibly different. I'm curious in that regard, you know, how does this fit into the world of pro golf? And then kind of the follow-up there is, what excites you about pro golf right now? What concerns you about pro golf? Anything like that?
Not too much concerns me about professional golf, where it's headed. We've had a great infiltration of young, talented, great golfers that are great people too, that really puts golf in a great spot. And I feel very comfortable about the guys that that are a big part of the game right now. And this event, though, is a bit of a risk, if you will, because first of all, golf's never been put on pay-per-view, and second, we've never really taken the risk and had it become so intimate where the players are mic'd, where you do get to hear the in-depth conversations between player and caddy, the actual smack talk or conversations amongst players and what actually goes on inside the ropes. This type of coverage has not ever been done, so it's a bit of a risk that we're taking, but I think that from a viewer standpoint, it's also what viewers crave. By taking it off of telecast and putting it on pay-per-view and getting rid of the commercials, you get to hear the in-between shot conversations that takes place. That, again, is something that you don't ever get to see, but crave as a viewer. A
couple of grab bag things before I let you go, just because, you know, I'm talking to Phil, and I've always been curious about these things.
Let's hear it.
So I always love listening
to... Like the leather jacket.
That's exactly right.
What else is interesting to you?
I always enjoy listening to you in press conferences. I always enjoy you're very thoughtful in all of your responses.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm curious, if you were to go back to college right now, what would you study and why?
I was a psychology major in college. I used the studies to this day on human behavior and my kids, and you know, I use it all the time. My kids know about a lot of these studies. They are aware of it. And I think I would study psychology again because I've been so interested in it.
Really?
I don't know what job I would ever do. No, I don't. I wouldn't want to be a psychologist or psychiatrist, because you're always working out of the negative. You're always working with people's problems, and that's not really how I live. I'm much more positive. I don't really enjoy that. So I don't know what job I would ever do, but I really enjoyed being educated in that field.
So you've played professional golf for a long time. You've seen a ton of players. Who sticks out to you as the most underrated player you've seen, the most underappreciated player you've played against?
I don't really have a great answer for you. I think the most underestimated player would be Tiger. I don't think that people realize how great and play that he... I've seen him do things with a golf ball and hit shots in certain moments that seem to be the impossible, that or certainly the improbable, and he became the norm, and he was able to do it with ease. I saw him do that too much throughout my career and his career to think that, and it leads me to believe that people don't appreciate the level of greatness he achieved.
And the last thing, you know, you've kind of seen Tiger's entire career, both from a place of being a golf star when he arrived on the scene. I'm curious, what do you remember about the first time maybe you heard about him? You heard, you know, this young guy is coming, that sort of thing. And then what do you remember about the first time you met him?
I remember hearing about him when he played as an amateur in the LA Open, and there was just a curiosity, you know.
Yeah.
But we get that since Tiger. I've had a lot of players come along and say, "Oh, this kid is great. He got into this tournament, this PGA Tour event," and you watch him, and there are some good players, but nobody ever turned out to be as great as Tiger. So my first time aware of him was when he was in the LA Open as an amateur. There was a funny line that Sandy Lyle said when they said, "What do you think of Tiger Woods?" He says, "I don't know. I've never played it." And you know, it's funny now, and it's funny how that has come back to haunt everybody or him because of how well his career has gone and what a great player he's got. But it goes to show that until that point, and that was at that LA Open there at Riviera. So until that point, nobody on tour was aware of how good he was.
Yeah.
And when he won in 1996 at the Las Vegas Open, you could see what was coming. And then the Masters in 97 propelled him to the game to a whole different level.
Well, this is a stage unlike any other this week that we'll see on Friday. So best of luck.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
My pleasure. Thanks.
All right, that was a lot of fun. And real quick before we go, we got a few minutes with the executive producer from Turner, Craig Berry. He's talking a bit about the broadcast, what it's going to look like, the drones and stuff like that. So we're going to end it with the short interview we had with him, and everybody enjoy the match. All right, so what is going to make this broadcast different than what we're used to seeing on TVs? What are the cool things you guys are going to be doing?
Right. So I'll start the answer philosophically first. You know, I just think as we approach content in general, there's some really important philosophical ingredients that need to be recognized. One is, you know, kind of straddle that line of sports and pop culture, access, to be as close to the player, to the field, or in this case, the course, to the game as possible. Be authentic, be diverse, and be experiential, right? So I think when you take those philosophies and you apply them there, we're checking a lot of those boxes. So first and foremost, when we talk about access, you know, going down the line, the mics, right? Like, so making sure that we create an opportunity for the fan to create an emotional connection with both Phil and Tiger through the ability to hear them interact with each other and with the caddies. And essentially, you know, what the 1999 is, not only are you seeing this very competitive match, but you're getting to walk the course with Phil and Tiger. The placement of cameras inside the ropes, steady cams, and additional camera angles that once you apply to the mics will even get us closer and more intimate to the personalities of the players. I think the drones.
Yeah, great. Tell us about the drones. How are they going to be used?
I mean, I think this will be the first time in any live sporting event that we were able to apply live drone coverage. Generally, there's all kinds of regulations around the crowds. And in this case, the galleries, because we have a limited gallery, it has created a door or a portal for us to be able to access drone coverage. So yet a different lens, a whole new lens to be able to watch the game through or the match through.
What about the microphones? So the players are going to be mic'd the whole time. Are we going to hear them the whole time, or is it going to be turned off and just recorded and cut into the live broadcast?
Yeah. So look, I mean, if we had our way, we would have them provide the entire narrative mm-hmm. of the match. So it's going to be a balancing act, right, between our announcers, which we have, you know, quite a lot of it. If, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of Ernie, Darren, and Peter, and then of course we have Adam, Pat, Charles, and Sam, and then on with Bacon and Natalie. So we have a kind of a myriad of opportunity for people to interject and to kind of extend the narrative. So the best case scenario, and all of them have certain strengths that they can speak to when it comes to these guys going head to head. So in the end, when ultimately we try to find that balance, our choice is to have their mics up and potted and for them to kind of drive the storyline behind the match. I would also say that I just think from an approach standpoint that we understand the hardcore fan and the golf fan, but we also feel like we have an obligation to the casual fan to create an entertaining product for someone who may just be watching with someone or someone who's actually watching because it's a relatively large event and they want to be entertained. So I think the dynamic of the talent we have and the chemistry of the talent plus the nature of the event and the iconic nature of Phil and Tiger really lend themselves to kind of the entertainment factor.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for giving us some insight in that. Best of luck with the event, and we look forward to watching.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Craig.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.